This, on the part of the United States, Syria was always, the war against Syria by America was always just a prelude to and part of the war against Iran. It was a way primarily to weaken Iran, ready for changing the government of Iran. Well, it's all come to nothing. It's now crumbling in a really embarrassing way. And this is why the United States is so angry tonight.
Thank you very much. Peter Ford, former British ambassador to Syria, joining us live from Manchester, and Leith Maarouf, activist and political commentator from Beirut. That's all the time that we have for this edition of The Spotlight, and I'm very grateful that you shared your thoughts and views with us in this edition.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 146 to 148 of chapter Ali Imran from the Holy Quran, recited by Ali Parisgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa ka'ayyim min nabiyyin qatala ma'ahu ربيون كثير فما وهنوا لما أصابهم في سبيل الله وما ضعفوا وما استكانوا والله يحب وما كان قولهم إلا أن قالوا ربنا اغفر لنا ذنوبنا وإسرافنا في أمرنا ربنا اغفر لنا ذنوبنا وإسرافنا في أمرنا وثبت أقدامنا ربنا اغفر لنا ذنوبنا وإسرافنا في أمرنا وثبت أقدامنا وانصرنا على القوم الكافرين. فآتاهم الله ثواب الدنيا وحسن ثواب الآخرة والله يحب المحسنين. فآتاهم الله ثواب الدنيا وحسن ثواب الآخرة والله يحب المحسنين.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. And how many a prophet has fought with whom were many worshippers of the Lord? So they did not become weak-hearted on account of what befell them in Allah's way, nor did they weaken, nor did they abase themselves. And Allah loves the patient. And their saying was no other than that they said, "Our Lord, forgive us our faults and our extravagance in our affair, and make firm our feet and help us against the unbelieving people." So Allah gave them the reward of this world and better reward of the hereafter. And Allah loves those who do good to others.
Palestinians gather in front of the UN office in the Gaza Strip to mark the 75th anniversary of Nakba Day. Ukraine says Russia has launched an intense air attack on Kiev using drones, cruise, and probably ballistic missiles. And at least four people are killed in a shooting in the U.S. state of New Mexico as gun violence claims more lives across the country. Thanks for joining us. The Palestinian Authority president has blamed the U.S. and the U.K. for the ongoing plight of Palestinians. Mahmoud Abbas says that it is up to the colonial states to bring the sufferings of the oppressed nation to an end. He made the remark at a U.N. event in New York marking the 75th anniversary of Nakba, or catastrophe. He said that Washington and London took part in rendering the Palestinian people a victim when they decided to plant another entity in their lands for their own colonial goals. Abbas also demanded that Israel be suspended from the U.N., if it does not respect UN resolutions and grant Palestinians a state and a right of return for millions of refugees' descendants. This is the first time that the UN is commemorating Nakba Day. The General Assembly adopted a resolution in November 2022 to mark the occasion on May 15. Meanwhile, Palestinians have rallied in the West Bank city of Ramallah to mark the 75th anniversary of the Nakba.
Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip marked the 75th anniversary of the Nakba Day, also known as the Day of Catastrophe, in front of the United Nations office. Nakba Day marks the displacement of Palestinians upon the establishment of the Israeli regime in 1948, when Zionists drove out hundreds of thousands of Palestinians from the historic land of Palestine. According to UN figures, there are currently around 5 million registered Palestinian refugees. Around 1.3 million refugees live in the Gaza Strip and reside in 8 refugee camps under miserable living conditions. The Palestinian Legislative Council in Gaza also held a special session commemorating 75 years of Nakba and called on the international community to stop turning a blind eye to the plight of Palestinians.
Palestinians expressing their disappointment of the UN representing the international community who had created the Zionist entity in 1948, and until now, after 75 years, they are failing to respond to the Palestinians ambitions and dreams of an independent, sovereign state.
Palestinian refugees, their children and their grandchildren hold sacred the right to return to the land of their ancestors. 75 years on, Palestinian refugees say they have not lost hope of taking back what is rightfully theirs.
In this 75th anniversary of Nakba, we said our right won't fall down. We as refugees here in Gaza, we said to the Israeli occupation, we will get back to our land. If it's not today, tomorrow, if it's not us, our children. So this right won't fall down.
Every year as Palestinians mark the Nakba, they are not only commemorating the horrors that took place 75 years ago and the demolition of some 500 villages and towns, they are also marking the Nakba, or catastrophe, that continues in different forms to this day. Last Tuesday, the Israeli regime launched a five-day onslaught on the Gaza Strip, killing and maiming scores of Palestinians, including innocent women and children.
The Palestinian Nakba of 1948 is still continue. We can see this every day here in Gaza. The last few days, the Israelis have attacked the 2.3 million innocent Palestinians, killed 33 Palestinians, wounded dozens, destroyed dozens of houses.
Nakba Day is commemorated annually by Palestinians and by millions of those who support them and their cause around the world. Nakba Day is special for the people of Gaza, where most of the inhabitants are refugees and children of refugees. Despite decades of displacement, they refuse to give up the right of return to their hometowns and villages. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
You're committing genocide. In Canada's largest city, young Palestinians have taken the lead in remembering 75 years of resistance and the ongoing displacement and dispossession faced by Palestinians with the commemoration of Nakba Day in the streets of downtown Toronto.
The Zionists once upon a time said that the older generation will die and that the youth will forget. And we are here today proving not only that the youth will not forget, but that the youth will take up an active role in our people's struggle for national liberation. We believe that we have a responsibility to confront Zionism in our locales, wherever Zionism is.
Well, 75 years of occupation, 75 years of crimes against humanity. We're here to stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people. And we want liberation. We believe that we are the generation of liberation.
Journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, murdered by Israeli troops 1 year ago, and political prisoner Kader Adnan were remembered among the numerous martyred and hundreds injured since the start of the year in historic Palestine amid an increase of violence by the Zionist occupation forces.
In the West Bank, we have seen continuous raids on cities like Jenin and Nablus, and these attempts have been to quell the youth that is rising up, resisting the settler colonial state that is taking away their rights and their right to live in dignity. We have seen home demolitions across historic Palestine in 48, in Al-Naqab, in Sheikh Jarrah. We have seen Palestinians being displaced. We have seen political prisoners succumb to their to medical negligence, a policy implemented by the Zionist entity intended to make sure that our political prisoners are effectively being slowly assassinated.
And so we are here saying that our prisoners carry the struggle forward and are our compass, that we will honor our martyrs and uphold their legacy. And we call on Palestinian youth and Arabs all across the world to play an active role in our struggle for national liberation.
Activists from a wide range of organizations are calling on Canadians to support Palestinian resistance by opposing Canada's contribution to Palestinian dispossession and joining the demand to end the illegal occupation. Camille Escalante, Toronto.
Moscow is no exception in commemorating Nakba Day. The ambassador of Palestine to Russia recalled the importance of Nakba so that the Palestinian cause remains alive in the memory of the Arab Islamic nation and the freedom-loving people of the world. Nakba Day designates as criminal the actions of those who provided funds and promises for the capture of Palestine from its people in the interests of the Zionist occupying entity, which committed and continues to commit the most heinous crimes against Palestinians.
I mean, today we are separating here and gathering here, I mean, to send a message for everybody that there's a right for Palestinian people. And we are need our rights. We need to live like others.
The participants assured that the Palestinians are unfailingly committed to their land and the establishment of a Palestinian state with Jerusalem al-Quds as its capital.
Our Nakba, the memory of the catastrophe that befell the Palestinian people. We as Palestinians living in Russia mark this day here in Moscow every year. We call on all the free peoples of the world to stand in solidarity with our wounded people who are paying a huge price every day as a result of this occupation and encroachment on their property. The Palestinian people have lost their possessions, lost their land, and are now scattered while there are those who claim that the land of Palestine is theirs, but we know this land will return to us Palestinians.
The double hypocrisy of the international community is that there is criminal responsibility in Europe for doubts about the persecution of Jews and the so-called Holocaust, then the fact that the Palestinians have become a nation without a homeland. Thousands have died and are dying. Hundreds of thousands have lost their homes. It's all the same. They don't notice it. It is important for Russia to demonstrate solidarity with the people of Palestine because Russia is a country with soul, feeling the pain of others. To top it off, today the West has unleashed against Russia a piece of the repression that the Palestinians have been subjected for 75 years.
Nakba Day on May 15, 1948, was the fruit of many years during which the Zionist movement and the British planned to create an Israeli occupation entity and expel the indigenous inhabitants from their land.
On the anniversary of the Nakba Day, Moscow reiterated its readiness to continue its support for Palestinians aimed at achieving their legitimate rights and the establishment of their own free state. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
The 5 days' military aggression on Gaza has finally come to an end. Dozens of people, including women and children, were killed during the recent Israeli onslaught on the besieged coastal territory. Yet the international community has failed to take any concrete measures against the Israeli regime for its atrocities against Palestinians.
Gaza Strip, and yet again, another Israeli deadly aggression on the blockaded territory that finally ended following an Egypt-brokered truce on Saturday. The five-day onslaught claimed the lives of over 30 people, including women and children. The Palestinian fatalities included several Islamic Jihad commanders. Khalil al-Bahtini, the commander of the Al-Quds Brigades in the northern Gaza Strip, Tariq Azzeddin, a spokesperson for the Islamic Jihad, who also managed retaliatory operations in the West Bank and Gaza, and Jihad al-Ghannam, secretary of the movement's military council, were all among those assassinated along with their families. A total of 51 Palestinian houses were completely destroyed, while about 1,000 others were damaged, prompting many people across Gaza to become homeless.
Now we are homeless, so we have no choice but to sleep on the street. Everything of us is ruined. I am worried about my children and other family members.
I demand compensation following this ceasefire because we are living on the streets now, no house or anything. My children and their children have no home. We are all left with nothing.
The conflict marked the worst episode of fighting between Gaza's resistance factions and the Israeli regime since a 10-day war in 2021. The carnage was to the extent which drew reaction from the United Nations. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres condemned the Israeli regime's onslaught on Gaza as unacceptable. The UN chief also called on the Israeli regime to immediately stop the bloodshed. Guterres said Israel must abide by its obligations under international humanitarian law, including proportionate use of force and taking all feasible precautions to spare civilians and civilian objects in the conduct of military operations. The UN chief also censured the Israeli closure of Gaza border crossings, which prevented the entry of foodstuff, medical supplies, and fuel into the besieged coastal territory.
During the past several years, Palestinian resistance groups have managed to enhance their military capabilities in the face of the Israeli adventurism. The latest aggression and the assassination of resistance commanders not only has increased the resolve of the Palestinian resistance against an occupying regime, but it has also united all factions in their struggle to liberate Palestine.
The latest Israeli aggression on Gaza brings to the spotlight the power and strength the Palestinian resistance groups have attained during the past several years. A joint statement by resistance factions in Gaza is a testimony to that. The statement said the retaliatory rocket attacks and steadfastness of resistance fighters messed up the regime's calculations during the recent onslaught on Gaza. It added the new round of fighting with the occupying Israeli regime further strengthened the resistance front. The Zionist enemy mistakenly believed that the time was ripe for assassination of Palestinian resistance leaders, but it was a grave miscalculation. The umbrella group said that Israeli military officials had planned to wrap up the latest onslaught on the Gaza Strip in a very short span of time, but were stunned by the scope of resistance fighters' preparedness and rapid response to air raids. The groups warned Israel against the implementation of the policy of targeted killings, adding that resistance fighters have their fingers on the trigger and will not hesitate to respond in case the regime in Tel Aviv resorts to assassinations. But with Israeli officials admitting that the Islamic Jihad fired 6,000 rockets toward the occupied territories, it seems that the power of Palestinian resistance has already done the job, creating fear and threat among Israeli authorities. With all the fuss about the Israeli Iron Dome, numerous Palestinian rockets managed to intrude into the airspace of the occupied territories and inflict their stated losses. The death of an Israeli settler as a result of those rocket fires during the recent conflict was an indication of that. What seems to be of very high significance is that assassinating Palestinian commanders will not bring security to the Israeli regime and instead will enhance the extent of resistance on the part of Palestinian factions and increase their resolve in the face of the Israeli atrocities. That not only will cost Israel a heavy price in case of any gross miscalculations, as resistance leaders have put it, but will undoubtedly challenge the existence of an occupying regime.
Ukrainian officials have reported a wave of fresh Russian airstrikes on the capital Kiev and its surrounding areas. The head of the city's military administration says the pre-dawn attack was, quote, exceptional in its density, as it involved drones, cruise, and probably ballistic missiles. In a social media post, the official claimed, however, that Ukraine was able to repel most of the projectiles. Kiev is said to have suffered its eighth raid this month. Officials in other cities near Kiev have also reported heavy airstrikes, without specifying the casualties or damage. The attack comes as Ukraine is preparing to launch a summer counteroffensive against Russia in the embattled eastern regions. The shooting in the southwestern U.S. state of New Mexico has left four people dead, including the suspect. The incident took place in a residential area in the town of Farmington. Two officers were also wounded in the exchange of gunfire with the suspect. Police said that there were multiple civilian victims, at least three of whom died. The shooter was believed to have acted alone. So far, there is no details on the reasons behind the attack. The frequency of shooting incidents in the U.S. has increased significantly in recent years. This as politicians remain deadlocked on tighter gun control laws. In Turkey's presidential election, neither of the main candidates, the incumbent President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, nor his main rival Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, were able to gather the needed threshold for an outright win. The country will head to a runoff 2 weeks from now on May 28th. Of course, one of Russian Saglam has more from Istanbul.
Turkey's presidential election is heading to an unprecedented runoff, as none of the candidates were able to gather the needed threshold to become the country's president. The current president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, fell short of the 50% plus one needed for an outright win, receiving 49.51% of the votes, while his opposing alliance candidate Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu got 44.88%. In a speech made on the AKP headquarters balcony, the incumbent President Erdogan thanked his supporters and promised them the win.
Turkey has proven once again that it is among world's leading democracies with its commitment to superiority of national will, freedom of its citizens in their political choices. We strongly believe that we will continue to serve our nation for the next 5 years.
Meanwhile, Kılıçdaroğlu, the candidate of six opposition political parties who seek to topple President Erdogan, assured he would win the election in the second round.
Despite all his slander and insults, Erdogan could not get the result he expected. The election cannot be won on the balcony.
Analysts believe Erdogan will win the second round. As for the 5% who gave their vote to Sinan Ogan, who is coming from a national party, will not vote for the opposition candidate after Kılıçdaroğlu's agreement with Kurdish HD party.
The second runoff will be challenging for both alliances because Sinan Ogan and his alliance are against the presence of refugees. Therefore, it is hard for them to make an agreement with People's Alliance and President Erdogan. And at the same time, it's harder for them to agree with the Table of Six Alliance because of the support of Kurdish HD party for Kılıçdaroğlu. As they said earlier, if we are to support Kılıçdaroğlu, he has to abandon the HD.
Voter turnout on Sunday was at unprecedented 88.92%. Candidates now have to work twice as hard to push voters to take to the polling stations once again. 2 weeks from now, Turkish people will have to once again head to the polling stations to vote for their future president, while the candidates have 2 weeks to try and sway the public towards themselves for the victory. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
And that is for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends, no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names, in the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger, and I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, the manifestation of truth. In the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Salam, dear listeners, and heartfelt condolences to you on a very doleful day. Today, the 25th of the month of Shawwal, is the day on which in the year 148 AH, corresponding to 765 AD, was martyred in Medina through a fatal dose of poison, the sixth infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad. Blessings of God upon him and his progeny. As usual, the day is a public holiday in the Islamic Republic of Iran, where, since last night, the faithful are holding mourning ceremonies to pay their respects to the memory of Imam Jafar Sadiq, peace upon him. Before we present you a special feature in this regard, here is a mind-stimulating statement from the sixth Imam to ponder upon. Islam could be called naked. Thus, prudency is its dress. Decorum is its adornment. Good deed is its personality. And piety is its pillar. Everything should have a basis. The basis of Islam is devotion to us, the Prophet's progeny. What you heard is indeed a wonderful description of the dynamism of faith, and this should dispel any doubts about Islam being a creed of violence, hatred, vandalism, and bloodshed, as alleged by its enemies, and, as is enacted some countries by terrorists, masquerading as Muslims as per the script written for them by their masters in the US and Israel. These words of wisdom should be carefully pondered upon so as to sift truth from falsehood, differentiate faith from hypocrisy, and discern between right and wrong, in order to defeat the devilish designs of the Takfiri savages, who have denuded Islam of its dynamics by divesting it of its dress, despoiling its adornment, distorting its values, dismantling its pillars and devastating all its fundamentals, especially its cornerstone of devotion to the Ahlul Bayt, or the blessed progeny of the Messenger of Mercy. As is clear from its wordings, the person who expressed them was a member of the Immaculate Ahlul Bayt, devotion to whom is an article of faith enshrined in the Noble Quran in several ayahs such as 33 of Surah Ahzab and 55 of Surah Ma'idah. This article of faith has been further expounded in clear tone by the Seal of Prophets in his sermon from Mount Mercy or Jabal al-Rahma on the plain of Arafat on the 9th of Dhul-Hajjah, 10 AH, during his farewell Hajj pilgrimage. He said, "I am leaving behind among you the Thaqalain, the Book of God, and my progeny, the Ahlul Bayt. Hold fast to them, and you will never go astray. For the two never part with each other, even when they return to me at the fountain of Kauthar on the Day of Judgment." The 25th of Shawwal brings into sharper focus the identity of this impeccable figure, who was the reviver of Sunnah and Sirah, or behavior and practice of the Prophet of Peace. It was on this day that he was forced to leave the world as a martyr in the year 148 AH, at the age of 65 years, as a result of a fatal dose of poison administered to him on the orders of the cruel caliph Mansur Davaniqi of the usurper Abbasid regime. As we said earlier, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, the sixth divinely designated heir of the Prophet of Islam, was famously known as As-Sadiq, or the most truthful, an epithet by which his illustrious ancestor, the Prophet, was also known. No wonder the immortal legacy of the sixth Imam, that is, Fiqhul Ja'fari, or the Ja'fari school of jurisprudence, is actually the pure and pristine Shari'at of the Almighty's last and greatest Prophet, in contrast to the so-called schools of jurisprudence that are based on qiyas, which means guesswork in religious matters on the basis of dubious narrations. The Imam has firmly said in this regard, "The practice of qiyas in deriving laws would lead to the obliteration of the deen, that is, religion." The question arises, who would martyr such a peerless person and why? The answers become obvious when we glance at the tragic sequence of events following the passing away of the Prophet and the deprivation of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, of his divinely decreed right of political leadership of the Islamic State. It is outside the scope of this brief radio program to either mention the Prophet's public proclamation of Imam Ali as vicegerent on God's express commandment at Qadir-e Khum in 10 AH while returning from the Hajj pilgrimage, or the seizure of the caliphate from the Prophet's elder grandson, Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace upon him, in 41 AH by the godless Umayyad regime, which was replaced by the equally ungodly Abbasid regime that was also fearful of the popularity of the Prophet's progeny, the Ahlul Bayt, amongst the Muslim Ummah. Imam Jafar Sadiq, peace upon him, needs no introduction. Born in 83 AH, he who was a 12-year boy when his grandfather, Imam Zainul Abidin, peace upon him, son of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, the immortal martyr of Karbala, passed away. In 114 AH, at the age of 31, he was entrusted by the imamate on the martyrdom of his father, Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, during the rule of the Umayyad tyrant, Hisham ibn Abdul Malik. In the next decade and a half, the Umayyads were defeated and cast into the dustbin of history. The new usurpers that replaced them were offspring of the Prophet's uncle, Abbas ibn Abdul Muttalib, and had deceived the Muslim masses by saying they had risen up to give the rule of the Islamic State to the Ahlul Bayt. In the meantime, Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, fully aware of the political conditions, had kept himself and his followers away from the political and military turmoil. He had burnt in the flame of a lamp the letter sent by Abu Salameh al-Khalal, of one of the commanders of the uprising, offering him rule of the state. As the divinely designated imam, his position was above such a caliphate which his illustrious ancestor Imam Ali, peace upon him, had called worse than a goat's sneeze. The Abbasids, who had now set aside their deceptive devotion to the Prophet's progeny, soon dispensed with the dress and decorum of Islam by adorning themselves with the robes of corruption and oppression. To them, the immaculate personality of Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, appeared as a thorn, since they were aware that as long as the rightful descendant of the Prophet was physically present, their claim to be successors of the Prophet was under a big question. Mansur, the second Abbasid caliph, oblivious of the pledge he had given to Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, years ago at the famous gathering of the Hashemite clan at Abwa during the Umayyad era, started to prop up pseudo-scholars in the vain hope of belittling the Prophet's heir. He closed down the 60 Imams' famous academy in Medina, which at its height had over 4,000 scholars studying various branches of Islamic and natural sciences, including the father of chemistry, Jabir ibn Hayyan. Despite the restrictions placed by the regime, the Imam had the time to teach the seekers of facts and realities that the earth is spherical. It revolves around the sun. The air contains oxygen. The water has hydrogen. the mysteries of the rays of light. Besides expounding to them the proper cognizance of Almighty Allah, the concept of divine justice, the correct manner of prayer and supplication, and the wisdom of reward and punishment on the day of resurrection. At the same time, he advised those in political authority to cater to the needs of the people. Be kind to the masses. Do not oppress them. Behave in good manner. Desist from embezzlement and stealing from the public treasury. And avoid listening to mischief mongers whose main intention is to wreck the life of others. A vivid example in this regard is the sixth Imam's letter to Abdullah al-Najashi, who was the governor of Ahvaz and Fars in southwestern and southern Iran. The letter was given to a person who lacked the means to pay the heavy taxes levied by the regime, and it read, "In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, behave leniently towards your brother. May Allah be lenient with you too." When the governor received the letter, he kissed it, read it, and not only exempted the bearer from paying the heavy tax of 10,000 dirhams, but granted him several other facilities. This and other examples of public welfare, coupled with the imparting of the genuine teachings of Islam as well as grooming in science and technology, were viewed with horror by Mansur Davaniri, who knew that the rightful successor of the Prophet was Imam Jafar Sadiq, peace upon him, and once people became aware of this reality, they will most surely turn away from the Abbasids. Finally, on this day in 148 AH, the tyrant ended the 34-year imamat of Imam Jafar Sadiq, peace upon him, by martyring him through a dose of poison, little knowing that it is God's will to keep the torch of divine guidance glowing forever until the advent of the Prophet's 12th and last successor, Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, to establish the global government of peace, prosperity, and justice. The blessed tomb of Imam Jafar Sadiq, peace upon him, is in the sacred Baqi Cemetery in Medina, and the faithful keep coming and continue to salute his resting place from near and far. Here we present you some aphorisms from Imam Jafar Sadiq, peace upon him. For a true believer, knowledge is his companion, clemency is his supporter, patience is the commander of his army, lenience is his brother, and charity is his father. The desire for worldly pleasures causes grief and sadness, while abstinence from such pleasures soothes both the heart and the body. Regard him who ruptured relations with you, give him who deprived you of his bestowals, treat kindly him who mistreated you, greet him who reviled you, be just to him who disputed with you, and pardon him who wronged you in the same way you like others to pardon you. And take lessons from God's pardoning you. Don't you see that the sun benefits both the pious and licentious, while the rain falls on both the virtuous and the wrongdoers?
Almighty, peace be upon him, said, "The Lord Most High has chosen for us certain followers, Shiites, who assist us. If we are joyful, they are joyful. And if we are sorrowful and sad, they are sorrowful and sad."
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and this is Palestine Declassified, where we investigate the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. The Zionist entity is a long-standing signatory to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, but it continues to flout the very principles of the declaration to which it's supposedly committed. Article 9, for example, is unequivocal. It states that no one shall be subjected to arbitrary arrest, detention or exile. Yet last year alone, the Israeli regime subjected more than 2,000 Palestinians to arbitrary administrative detention orders. And as we've previously reported on Palestine Declassified, the conditions in Israeli prisons are appalling. Palestinian prisoners have little or no legal recourse, so many of them have engaged in hunger strikes as a form of resistance. One of those was Qada Adnan. And Latifa Abu Chakra has this report about his heroic struggle for Palestinian liberation and his ultimate sacrifice after an 87-day-long hunger strike.
A giant has moved on. Qadar Adnan, a father, baker, mathematician and spokesman for the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement, has died after 87 days of hunger strike in an Israeli dungeon. He launched his protest against his administrative detention by resisting the natural human urge to consume food. Born on March 24, 1978, in the town of Arrabi, close to the Palestinian city of Jenin, Adnan came to age as a much-loved member of his family. His first arrest in his early 20s by the Israeli occupation forces led to 4 months imprisonment. The very same year, he was arrested by the Palestinian Authority for leading a student demonstration against the visit of pro-Israel French Prime Minister Lionel Jospin to his university, Bir Zeit, in Ramallah. Khadr gained a degree in mathematics and went on to own a bakery, where he provided the people of Jenin with sustenance. The irony is that one who provided food to others would later go on to be known for using his own hunger as a tool of emancipation. Across his life of struggle, Qadar Adnan was arrested 12 times. Many of those times, he was held for lengthy periods without any charge in what is commonly referred to as administrative detention. It is believed that around 800 Palestinians are also held on such a basis throughout the network of dungeons in the Israeli matrix of unfreedom squatting over Palestine. His arrest by Israeli occupation forces on December 17, 2011, led to his first 66-day hunger strike, which at the time broke the record for the longest by any Palestinian political prisoner. The settler colonial agents took him from his home, where his pregnant wife and two daughters lived with him. During that arrest, he was interrogated for 18 days and said to have been tortured by Israeli intelligence. But the spirit of Khadr Adnan was not broken, and he held his hunger strike, demanding his release from administrative detention. The strike was successful and led to his release in February 2012. Later that year, following the Israeli forces' assassination of Palestinian revolutionary thinker Basil al-A'raj, Khadr Adnan condemned the treachery of the Palestinian Authority, stating that those who assisted Israel in the killing of the martyr Basil were in fact worse than the occupation itself. The last time he was detained on administrative detention in 2023, his three-month hunger strike would lead to his death. He fought with everything he had for the liberation of his people, and with his steadfast perseverance, he has written his name in the stars.
As always, we're joined by our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and a former professor at Bristol University, and he's now a non-resident senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeyim University. He's also a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch, and he's a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. Our guest expert today is Yusuf Al-Halou, who is from Gaza and joins us via Skype. Yusuf is a Palestinian commentator, and over the last 15 years, he's worked as a broadcast news correspondent for various international media outlets. His output has been featured on media channels all over the world, including the Real News Network in the US, the BBC in the UK, and TV New Zealand, among many others. Welcome to the show. Yusuf, I wonder if you could start with you. I mean, how has the death of Khadr Adnan in an Israeli jail been received by Palestinians?
Thank you for having me. Well, it was received with anger, frustration, and sadness because we lost a Palestinian figure. We lost a Palestinian icon who caused havoc to Israel because of his steadfastness and high morale. He was an icon of hope because he was released. He forced Israeli prison services to release him. He was arrested, rearrested. He took part in the hunger strike many times. So, and also Palestinian resistance movements in Gaza, the West Bank, also they reacted angrily and they responded by retaliating. Khadr Adnan will remain in our collective memory for generations to come. His family vowed that they will continue the path. His children, from where he came from Jenin in the West Bank, obviously it was a very sad moment, but he raised the spirit of other Palestinian inmates.
I mean, David, tell us about Jenin, where Khadr Adnan was from. I mean, what's its significance in the latest uprising?
Well, it's been very significant. I mean, Jenin has been a significant place in the occupied territories for decades now. But it's right in the north of what's called the West Bank, quite close to Nablus, which has been another epicentre of the resistance there. And the Jenin brigades, new brigades have emerged there, along with things like the Lion's Den in Nablus. And these are new armed groups which have bring together all the different factions. So Hamas on the one hand, the PIJ, which Adnan was a member of, and then some of the leftist factions, but also members of Fatah, which runs the Palestinian Authority, which is divided down the middle on these questions. And so that Fatah members from the Al-Aqsa Brigade, which is the armed wing of Fatah, have been joining in these missions. So this is a very important area for the renewed resistance which is happening in the territories and which is leading to the possibility of full-scale conflict.
Mm. Yusuf, what can you tell us about Adnan's victorious hunger strike in 2012?
Well, he served the longest hunger strike at the time, and of course it was celebrated because he succeeded in gaining his freedom temporarily before he passed away. He was allowed to die slowly in his prison cell because of negligence. He posed as a beacon of hope. He raised the spirit and morale of other Palestinian hunger strikers. And of course, he was praised highly by the Palestinian people, even by non-Palestinians. His image, his photo, is almost in the memory and mind of every Palestinian and every freedom fighter. Adnan was a beacon of hope. He was a beacon of, and we sadly lost him, but we will not forget him.
I mean, David, tell us about the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement, which, you know, Adnan was a significant part of, wasn't he?
So in addition to Hamas, which is probably the best known resistance group, there, of course, is other resistance groups. There's Palestinian Islamic Jihad, which is more Islamic and perhaps even more Islamic than Hamas, if that's possible. Mm. And then there are the more secular leftist groups like the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine or the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, various factions associated with them. Now, PIJ is particularly closely related to the Islamic Republic of Iran, and they are supported by Iran, although, of course, Iran supports all of the Indeed. Resistance groups, and that's, of course, the case with other states round about who are supporting the resistance axis, like the Syrians, for example. The Syrians, publicly on record, are saying, doesn't matter what words you have in the name of your organization, Syria supports you, by which it means that it will support what are seen as Islamic groups in the West, seen as Islamist groups, that racist term that's used for anyone in the Muslim world who takes up politics and thinks of religion as part of that process. So PIJ is a very important element here, and it's been seen as a key target for the Israelis. They see it as a threat, and they've tried to divide off the PIJ from Hamas and from the other groups, and that's not working.
No, indeed. I wonder whether, as well, you might sort of give us your impression about the latest Israeli assassination campaign against the PIJ as well.
Well, I mean, that isn't the key thing. Is that they're trying to say to the resistance, well, you know, you can split, we'll try and split you, and of course the whole way in which resistance is now operating in the West Bank, especially, is to have. To dispense with the differences between the different organisations and the formation of the Lion's Den or of the Janine Brigade or the Falcon's Nest, a whole series of new resistance groups are groups which purposefully dissolve the barrier between these different factions, and they all fight together. And they all fight together in the localities where they are, in Janine or in Nablus, but also increasingly they are coordinating across the whole of the West Bank and indeed with Gaza. We know already, of course, that there is coordination outside the territories in Beirut, for example, where the Iranians and Hezbollah and Hamas and other resistance leaders coordinate on actions throughout the territory. So we're seeing an increased coordination on the ground and throughout the region, which is, of course, a huge threat to Israel, and that's why they want to split off different parts of the resistance from each other.
Indeed. I mean, Yusuf, Israel is currently bombing Gaza yet again. As a Palestinian journalist living in Britain with family in Gaza, I wonder whether you could give us a sense of what's that like?
Well, Gaza is the world's largest open-air prison, and Israel uses Gaza as a testing ground for its advanced weapons. The rockets and the bombs Israel uses to target different locations across Gaza creates loud explosions and shakes the ground. It's a terrible situation, scary. There's no safe place in Gaza. My family, the rest of the 2 million people, they have been experiencing this psychological issue for more than 15 years since Israel waged its first major offensive in Gaza in late 2008. So weapons, tanks, shells, drones fly constantly in the sky of Gaza. Incursions take place, the besieging of Gaza. All these measures constitute psychological problems, and people see their loved ones killed, maimed, children torn apart. Last night, 4 children were killed. Families were targeted while they were sleeping in their houses. So it's unbelievable situation. People in Gaza, they have no normal life. It's abnormal situation. The siege has been blockaded since 1967. The airspace of Gaza has been blockaded, since the occupation of the Palestinian territories. The land border crossings are also restricted and controlled by Israel. So Israel controls what goes inside Gaza. Israel controls what happens in Gaza. It carries out airstrikes. It's disproportionate force used against defenseless civilian population. So whenever there is an airstrike in Gaza or tank shelling or bombardment, obviously I become worried. I contact my family. But they tell me it has become the norm. The, you know, like... can you imagine? The suffering has become daily part of their lives.
Yeah. Well, you certainly have our solidarity, Yusuf. But we're just going to pause the discussion there for a moment, as we've got another report now about the history of Palestinian hunger strikes in the Israeli dungeon network.
The Israeli dungeon network, which deepens Palestinian on freedom, is vast and sprawling. It is believed that close to 5,000 Palestinians are held in the occupiers' cells, with almost 200 of them children and almost 50 of them women. Within that context, the battle of empty stomachs is a tactic some Palestinians have been known to use as a method of protesting their enslavement. The first collective hunger strikes following the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza took place in 1969 in Ramla and Kafr Yonah jails. Palestinians refused to eat for 11 days, protesting against the orders to address Israeli jailers with the words, "Yes, sir." They were also expressing their opposition to the bad quality food in the occupation dungeons. Palestinian women in Israeli jails had to go on hunger strike for 9 days in order to obtain sanitation supplies. So much for women's rights. Israel also has a history of force-feeding Palestinian prisoners who are on hunger strike. This has led to death in several cases, and the United Nations condemned it as tantamount to cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment. Despite that, Israel passed legislation in 2015 that legalized the force-feeding of prisoners on hunger strike. The longest Palestinian hunger striker on record is Samir Issawi of the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Famous for his resistance during the Second Intifada, Samir was treacherously rearrested by Israel following a prisoner swap. He then undertook a gargantuan 266-day hunger strike in which he survived on only intravenous vitamins and minerals. Israel feared that his death in prison would spark riots and released him in 2013. Even an empty Palestinian stomach is a threat to the fragile squatter entity.
Yusuf, what can you tell us about the history of hunger strikes in the Palestinian struggle?
Well, the Palestinian prisoners, political prisoners, they adopted the Irish experience to live on water and salt. I'm aware of what happened at those times. So it's a means to pressure the Israeli prison authorities to respond to their demands, which are obviously to release them from Israeli prisons and detention centers and to stop the sudden storming of their prison rooms, and also to bring those in the cells to the normal prison rooms, and also to return the confiscated devices such as phones